Could you build a business that's better for our planet? That's what I have set out to answer. Hi, I'm Marco Pimentel, marketing expert and entrepreneur and host of the podcast, Someone Like You. I become fascinated in finding creative climate solutions in business, and on the podcast, I break down how founders and CEOs are building climate-friendly business solutions that are opportunities for growth while being better for the planet.
This will be the future of our project. It will be not just to operate as an independent aquaculture facility, but to operate as one link in the chain of a biocircular economy, where from the aggregate of all of those projects working together in a circle, that there is no waste that goes back into the environment.
Did you know that over a billion people rely on our oceans for their main source of food? However, our sea life is in danger due to overfishing, pollution, harmful fish farming practices, quite a few different things. But today, my guest is Kirk Havercroft. He's the CEO of Sustainable Blue, and he talks about the critical challenges threatening our oceanic ecosystems and the groundbreaking solutions his company offers. Sustainable Blue is on a mission to change the game in how we raise Atlantic salmon. Since 2007, they've been using a special fish farming system that doesn't harm the environment, and it makes sure that their salmon are raised without any escape, antibiotics, growth hormones, or waste, and they've been supplying local restaurants and stores for nearly 10 years. With his background in project management and accounting, Kurt leads a team that's making a big difference. They've not only expanded their impact in Canada, but they're also taking their eco-friendly farming practices to the United States. Join us as I talk to Kurt and analyze how Sustainable Blue is not just about raising grain salmon, but about leading the way in keeping our oceans healthy while providing sustainable and delicious food for everyone. I wanted to take a second to tell you about our Season 2 sponsor, Digital Scope. Did you know your website has a carbon footprint? Well, digital technology has a larger carbon footprint than the entire aviation industry, and it's only getting bigger. Digital power consumption is increasing by 9% every year. At this rate, our digital carbon footprint could be responsible for as much as 14% of global emissions by 2040. If you're a digital-first company, or really any company with a website, and want to understand the impact your website is having on the environment, Digital Scope can translate visitor data into carbon measurement, all with a simple one line of code added to your website. Check out digitalscope.com/someone like you. The first 100 people to sign up get free access for an entire year. So before we kind of get into Sustainable Blue and talk about aquaculture, but, you know, on land and what you're doing, I'd love to understand your background and how you kind of got correlated into this.
Yeah, my background by academia is finance and accounting. And when I came out of university in the UK, the first real job I interviewed for after graduating was with a water filtration company in the UK that had designed a special filtration system that it was deploying and using in building large public aquariums. So I simply went there looking for a job in finance and accounting, but I met the technical founder of the company who talked me through the mission, which was ultimately to develop this world-leading technology that would give that would allow us to have a fish farm, an aquaculture facility, which was based on a unique proprietary filtration system. And ultimately, it meant, you know, the ultimate goal was to be able to farm fish, capture the waste, not discharge anything back to the ocean, and be a sort of completely isolated facility. So as a sort of finance and accounting graduate, I was, you know, it was just such a compelling story and such an important story that it's fair to say I fell into this. I went for a job in finance and accounting, and I've been here for 26 years.
Wow. And when we think about farming and fish, I'm on the West Coast, so I see it. I see the fish farms on out in the sea. I'm a big fisherman, so this is kind of near and dear to my heart and understanding it. But when you joined, doing this on land was completely a new idea?
So at the time, there were some early land-based aquaculture facilities, but they were of a design that we call flow-through. The design that Sustainable Blue and some others now have is called RAS, R-A-S, which stands for Recirculating Aquaculture Systems. And that describes a facility where you've got fish in tanks, as you're feeding them, they put waste into the water. That water is taken back to a filtration system where either waste is removed from the water and the clean water is put back to the fish tanks. So that really came, that kind of technology came after I started in the industry. So the land-based aquaculture facilities that were up and running were just very, very simple, by the ocean, pump water in, take the dirty water out and let it run back into the ocean. There was no technology really. There was no recirculation component to it. So we came in at the very start of land-based aquaculture, but in its very simplistic form, I would say.
And land-based exists for trout and tilapia, but for salmon, it's often done in the ocean. So why look to this type of solution versus farming it in the ocean?
So, I mean, we could see problems with the conventional net pen salmon farming industry. And to put it into perspective, there's approximately 2.5 million metric tons of salmon farmed globally throughout the world any given year. And 99.99 something percent of those fish are grown in these open net pen environments. For us, we could, even sort of 25 years ago, we could see problems with that kind of approach if the industry chose to intensify and become a commodity industry, which is exactly what's happened. And the things that you're concerned about in the earlier days, it was having your fish in the open ocean where there might be diseases or bacteria or other environmental threats in the ocean that you simply can't protect your fish from. So, you know, our early concerns were about, you know, geez, in a fully open system, how do you protect your fish from whatever threats are there in the ocean? But more recently, it's kind of gone the other way, which is now, how do we protect wild fish from the problems that we're seeing in these sea cages or net pens? So now it's, we see a risk of disease in the net pens. We see those diseases getting transferred to wild fish. We see problems such as sea lice in the net pens. That also presents a significant risk to juvenile wild salmon who are swimming out into the ocean and they go past these net pens. So as the industry has intensified over the last 20 years, we've seen a corresponding decline in wild salmon populations. And we just, we wanted to navigate our way around all of those issues. We thought through the use of technology, we could fully control the environment, protect our fish from threats, diseases. We wouldn't have to use antibiotics. We wouldn't have to use any other forms of chemical or therapeutic to keep our fish healthy in the farm environment. And basically, you know, as the founder of the project said to me from the start, you know, we need just to leave the ocean to itself, and we need to bring aquaculture into a fully closed environment on land where we can grow our fish safely. And we can protect our fish from the risks that are out there in the ocean, and we can protect wild fish from the risk of emitting something which causes a problem to wild populations. So roll the clock forward, and we now have a facility that does not use antibiotics, does not use chemicals or therapeutics, has a fully controlled environment, which is held just where Atlantic salmon are most comfortable. And consequently, we get the best biological performance from the fish by just giving them what the fish actually needs.
Yeah, I've had the pleasure of meeting with Alexander Morton, who's been really influential on the west coast of BC to fish pens out of the water. And early results so far are showing some good results. And so my guess is that companies are doing it because it just costs a lot less money.
You mean, just to be clear, you mean companies are doing net pen farming because it costs less? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, so I'm assuming companies are doing this because it costs a lot less money when it comes to farming salmon in the ocean.
Yeah, that's true. So first of all, the capital expenditure that's required in a net pen farming facility is a lot less than it would be for a comparable volume to actually produce those fish on land. So the capital costs are certainly significantly lower. But the operating costs are also low. One of the costs that a land-based facility has that a net pen farmer does not have is the cost of power. We use a lot of pumps and a lot of systems to drive the water between the fish tanks and the filtration system. And then we use power to filter the water and take out the waste, and also then to put back into the water what the fish have taken out. So that maintenance of the optimal environment on land, you know, it has a capital cost and it has an operating cost. Now, if you're in the ocean, that's given free of charge, you know, from the ocean itself. But what we've seen in the industry recently is that the net pen industry now is beginning to have a cost which land-based facilities don't have. And the cost of production, which, you know, maybe 10 years ago was looking to be quite different, is now beginning to equalize. And certainly, you know, the cost of antibiotics, the cost of pharmaceuticals is a significant cost for the net pen farming industry. They also run infrastructure that we don't. They would have barges that carry feed out to the net pens. We don't have those kind of systems in place because we don't need them. So for us, really, what we're left with is a capital cost, which is still significantly higher than the net pen industry. An operating cost, which at scale, we believe will be comparable with a net pen industry. And I think then the long-term view is it comes down to a question of regulation. With you living on the West Coast, of course, you will have seen that the federal government has started to take a view on not renewing licenses for certain net pen facilities on the West Coast. Norway, which is the country that farms more Atlantic salmon than any other country in the world, has just introduced a punitive tax on all of the salmon farmers, and it's a resource tax. It's meant to return back to the Norwegian community tax revenue associated with having free use of the ocean as a means to eliminate your waste from the facility. So as far as we see it, there will be increasing regulation on net pen farming. There will be increasing financial obstacles to net pen farming. And we are beginning to see the net pen farming industry taking its first look at land-based to say, is this going to be the platform of the future, which we, of course, think it is.
So let's get to the business side of it. 25-plus years ago, thinking of doing this on land, filtration, how you pump water is very, very different. What were those first steps, or like the first of like, we need to get something of proof of concept? How did you begin?
So some of the earliest work was done in the UK in the first company that I joined when we left university. It's a long story as to how we ended up in Nova Scotia. But when we arrived here in 2007, the first process was to identify a piece of land and then begin construction of our very first facility. And we did that. Our first pilot plant was up and running in 2010. And basically, you know, if I took you for a tour of that building, which is still operational today, you would recognize it as a sort of prototype, as a pilot plant. a walk through that facility, you'll see, you know, the history of, you know, let's try a modification here and doing something this way. And you know what? That didn't particularly work how we wanted it to work. So let's go back to the drawing board and let's put a new piece of equipment in here. And some of that early work that we did obviously laid the groundwork for what ultimately has become now a commercially scaled zero discharge salmon aquaculture facility in Nova Scotia. So the whole site here is, it's a walk through history between, you know, 2010 and now, as we have slowly, incrementally developed the processes, the engineering, the technology, proved it out, grown our fish, tested the market. It's been a real journey of approximately 12 years so far. And I think it's important to point out that Sustainable Blue is by no means the only RAS salmon farm, certainly not in North America and definitely not in the world, of course. But it's fundamentally different from any other RAS salmon facility that we're aware of, in so much as it was so focused, the original technical founder was so focused on developing the technology to a point where we did not discharge any waste back into the ocean. That was a fundamental pillar of our technology development, that it's forced the project down the route of proprietary technology and engineering. So Sustainable Blue now builds all of its own filtration systems. It doesn't contract with a third party to build and design those systems. And we think that's made a critical difference to where the project is, because to go to a third party engineering firm, those companies will provide the working end of a fish farm for you, but they've never grown fish like we have grown fish. So we have designed, deployed, constructed, but then we've grown the fish through on the systems that we have built for ourselves. And we just think that has given us such an advantage in reaching a level of performance. And to the best of our knowledge, Sustainable Blue is the only zero discharge saltwater aquaculture facility anywhere in the world.
Every week on Someone Like You, we dive into stimulating conversations with founders, entrepreneurs, business owners, and the likes who are consciously and successfully creating sustainable business solutions for the long haul. Tune in every week for a new inspiring conversation on leading climate solutions. And if you're enjoying the podcast, don't forget, please subscribe on the platform of your choice and give us a rating and a review. It sounds like you've built quite a moat with this technology and because of this kind of pillar of no waste. How is all of this funded? It seems like an insurmountable amount of work.
It certainly has taken a lot of private capital to get to this point, because obviously you need to raise the capital to construct the facilities. And there are now on this site, there are six independent production buildings, which collectively give us a design maximum of 1,000 metric tons of salmon every year. So we've had to raise the capital incrementally to build those facilities along the way. But additionally, you need the capital to grow your fish once those facilities are built. And there's a 2-year grow out period for Atlantic salmon, starting with, you know, the eggs that go into the freshwater hatchery, all the way through to the adult salmon coming out, in our case, at about 9 pounds in the saltwater grow out side. So there are two sides to the capital requirement. There's the construction of the facilities, and then there's a working capital to grow your fish out for 2 years until they get to market. And so in the very early days, we looked to individuals with financial means who valued conservation, and they valued a sort of innovative approach that we were taking to aquaculture. As the capital need grew, we went to, I suppose, either individuals or organizations that had more resources available to them, so that as our needs grew, so did our shareholder base. But you know, so far we have relied on either private individuals or private companies. We haven't taken sort of private equity or institutional capital at this point.
And so the whole process, you mentioned you have a hatchery in-house, so you go from egg all the way to finished product?
That's correct. So for anybody that knows salmon, they'll know the life cycle, which is that the eggs hatch in freshwater rivers. And eventually the juvenile salmon will swim down the river looking for the ocean to go out and to grow and spend its sort of the time of its adult life out in the ocean. And then it returns to the river that it was born in to spawn. So to do salmon aquaculture on land, we have to replicate the life cycle here in our buildings. So we have a freshwater hatchery that takes the fish all the way through to approximately 100 grams in weight. And then at the right time, we introduce the fish into the saltwater grow-out environment, where it will then grow from that 100 grams all the way out to about 4 kilos, which is our target market size. So of the 6 buildings, 2 of them together take care of the freshwater hatchery side. And then the remaining 4 are for saltwater grow out.
And you say zero waste. How do you manage that waste and what do you do with it?
So the key to Sustainable Blue's ability to operate as a zero discharge facility is in how the technology works, the filtration technology, and how efficient it is at taking the waste out of the water, but losing such a very, very small amount of water in that process. So essentially, we end up with a very concentrated waste, and we will accumulate that over a number of days. We will eventually get somebody in with a septic truck. They come in, they take the sludge away, and in our case, currently, it goes just a few miles up the road from the facility to a biodigester, where our waste then goes into that facility and produces a renewable energy. And any water that was originally extracted as part of that waste removal process, so we've separated the solid from the water, that water then basically gets re-sterilized and made safe again so that we can take it back into the fish farm and put back the water that came out with the original process.
Now, going to actually selling the SAM, Sustainable Blue has a really kind of a beautiful market-ready brand, which I wouldn't assume that somebody growing salmon into open-net pens would have. Why do that? And is it because you're trying to connect consumers directly to the story and the brand?
Absolutely. Really what we're looking for, what we're seeing at the point of retail is our fish have somewhere between a 20 and 30% premium over and above what you might call a regular salmon that's grown in a net pen environment in high volumes. So in order to attract customers to the higher price point, there needs to be a point of brand recognition, value recognition, what we stand for as a company, what our mission is, and most importantly, what our values are. So within the sort of limited resources that we have for doing that, Sustainable Blue represents a set of values which we think gives the most responsible platform for aquaculture in the world. And an example of that would be the facility as it is, we think, is more advanced than any other in the world in terms of its responsibility footprint. But there's more work for us to do. And right now, the waste leaves the facility and is used in the generation of renewable energy. But one of the things on our radar coming up over the next couple of years is we are trialing the use of our waste combined with waste streams from other well-aligned technologies and projects within Nova Scotia, which when we all combine our waste streams together, we're trialing a soil amendment product or a fertilizer product, and we're having some amazing results in growing heads of lettuce and one or two other things. So, you know, we think there's a valuable use and a revenue stream for our waste. And there's collaboration that Sustainable Blue can do with other closely aligned companies to form a biocircular economy. And this is the direction ultimately that we're heading in. And this will be the future of our project. It will be not just to operate as an independent aquaculture facility, but to operate as one link in the chain of a biocircular economy where, you know, from the aggregate of all of those projects working together in a circle, that there is no waste that goes back into the environment.
I've tried farm salmon from an open net system, and being a fisherman, I'm a bit picky. And a lot of people, you know, antibiotics, sea lice issues, like there's concerns from a brand side. Sustainable Blue partnered with Chef Michael Smith, really famous chef in Canada. Love all of his shows. The salmon looks beautiful. What can you say about the taste of the product?
Yeah, it's a really, really good question. And it brings us on to a very, very important piece. So within aquaculture, the taste of salmon is impacted, not just the taste, the flavor, but also the flesh quality, the density and the texture. All influenced very strongly by what the salmon eats and which ingredients go into the aquaculture diet that a particular farmer is using. Now, in the net pen industry, which has become heavily commoditized, the emphasis has been on reducing the cost of production over the last 20 years. So what farmers have realized is that the protein and the oil ingredients that go into the salmon diet are the most expensive. And how can we drive the cost of the feed down? Well, we can start replacing expensive fish oil and fish meal with other sources of protein, which are less expensive. So there's been a slow departure, in our view, from, you know, what a wild Atlantic salmon tastes like versus what a typical farmed Atlantic salmon tastes like now, where there's been this substitution of proteins and oils with other land-based animals that can go into the diet. What Sustainable Blue has wanted to do is to get the flavor profile and the taste, the texture of the fish back as close as possible to a wild Atlantic salmon. So what it's done is it just hasn't compromised on the feed. So in our feed, all of the protein and all of the oil is derived from fish, not from other non-conventional sources of protein, oil, and fat. All of our protein and oil comes from fish. But to keep it sustainable, our feed and nutrition company sources byproducts from seafood processing plants first. So where we're cutting other species of fish, our feed company will source offcuts and the waste products from that. That will get pulled into our diet, and only where they can't fulfill the requirement do they then take fish from the ocean. And this allows us to be as sustainable as possible with what we call our fish in, fish out ratio. So what we have is, in our view, is a responsible diet, which as closely as possible resembles the kind of proteins, the kind of animals that a wild Atlantic salmon is going to eat. So hopefully what we're left with is a farmed product that's closer to wild, closer than any other product on the market.
Yeah, and we can't keep fishing our wild stocks, you know, the way that we are. We can't have Atlantic salmon in the open ocean. So why don't we see all of this all over the coasts of, you know, North America and Norway and switching to this? And I guess the question would be, if we think about 5-10 years, where do you see sustainable blue and where do you see land-based aquaculture in this type of platform?
So just before I answer that, I do want to come back to the fee point, because you're absolutely right in what you say. We cannot keep taking fish out of the ocean. All aquaculture, that is, if you're growing carnivorous fish, all aquaculture has to face this issue of we cannot keep taking ocean fish to produce aquaculture diets. We're going to run out of fish. So Sustainable Blue is actively participating with other companies that produce land-based proteins and oils, which fully replicate the kind of proteins and oils that you get in ocean fish. We've been trialing this with Dalhousie University in Halifax now for about 18 months, maybe a little longer. We're now on phase three, our final phase of the feed trial, where we have selectively eliminated some of these trial diets, and we're now down to our final two diets, one of which will become our commercial feed diet going forward. So the sustainable blue of the future will have a feed that is derived from its own formulation of land-based oils and proteins. But those oils and proteins, although land-based, will replicate the natural proteins and oils that you get in seafood, in other fish. And so, you know, it should really give us still a phenomenal tasting fish, one that represents what a wild Atlantic salmon looks like, but one that's truly responsible and a farm that's totally broken the link with the ocean. So we don't discharge waste there anymore. And we don't take fish from the ocean anymore. It's a total break. And this is critical to the path going forward. So where does Sustainable Blue see itself? Having now fully commercialized, now it's setting its sight on the path to significant growth and expansion, building out more facilities in Canada, also in the United States over the next 5 to 10 years. We'd like to see, we could be ambitious enough to see 30 to 50,000 metric tons of land-based production under the Sustainable Blue umbrella within the next 10 years. There are other RAS projects as well that are coming to market. Interestingly, in the United States, one or two have become established, but also several have had problems with regulation and permitting and are yet to actually get off the ground. Now, Sustainable Blue has such an advantage on the regulatory side because it doesn't need a discharge permit. The waste discharge from a land-based facility is a relatively contentious point. So we will be seeing more RAS projects coming to North America. They will have to find a way through the regulatory hurdles. But of course, Sustainable Blue has a clear path through that because it doesn't have to apply for a contentious waste discharge permit, or it doesn't need an exemption from the regulations around that.
It's amazing to think about what you and your team have built, especially over a long period of time, with this pillar of making sure that you have no discharge and waste. You know, everything from what you do with the waste, how you feed the fish, how you recirculate the water, you know, everything seems to be, you know, always at the core of your business. This podcast is really branded around the Lorax, and it's that cautionary tale. And I wanted to just ask you, like, you've been doing this for 25 years. What would you say to kind of a budding entrepreneur or an investor or somebody thinking about going into sustainability? What would you say is their first step?
I think there are two key points I would make for an entrepreneur about to embark on a project like this. The first is to say, you know, be authentic. Everybody's aware of the phrase greenwashing. If you're not authentic in your values, your mission statement, eventually consumers will see right through you. When I met the founder of this project, he didn't say to me, we're going to develop this zero discharge technology because it will give us a massive strategic advantage, which will convey, you know, maximum dollars to this project when compared to some of our competitors. He very simply said to me, we're going to develop zero discharge aquaculture because it's the right thing to do. And this is the value that's carried with every single employee that works for Sustainable Blue. We do this not because it's easy, it's extremely complex. We do it because it's the right thing to do and it's the right way to do aquaculture. So be authentic would be my first piece of advice. Otherwise, consumers will see right through you. But the second piece of advice would be, we talk about sustainability all the time from an environmental or ecological perspective, which of course is absolutely critical. But we must never lose sight of the fact that whatever project you're embarking on needs to be financially sustainable as well. So we're only going to change the world when companies who are doing the right thing are profitable, sustainable, and they're here to stay and set the standard for other companies within the same industry. So try to be extremely real about whatever product or service that you produce. Try to be extremely real about what that value is in the marketplace, what people will pay for it. Try to be extremely real about what it will cost you to produce that product or service, and prove to yourself that it's a financially sustainable model. We all need companies that are doing exactly the right thing, but those companies need to be here to stay. They need to have longevity, and for that, they need to be financially sustainable. So those would be my two key points.
Kurt, thank you very much for joining us. Where can people find out more about Sustainable Blue?
Our website is www.sustainableblue.com. And right now, for Eastern Canada, they can find Sustainable Blue Salmon in Sobeys. Hopefully, in the new year, we will be in Sobeys stores throughout the whole of Canada.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
This podcast is co-produced with The Brand is Female. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode of Someone Like You. And if you did, please share this. We're a new podcast, and I would love it if you could share it with a family member, friend, colleague, work colleague, share it on Slack, whoever you do, just share and spread the message of these incredible brands. Please also support these type of companies. They're doing the hard thing, and the hard thing often takes a lot of people to get on board. And don't forget, please subscribe on the platform of your choice and give us a rating and review. I'm Marco Pimentel. Thank you for joining us today. For more information on Someone Like You, you can find us on Instagram at Someone Like You Podcast, with all the links to the podcast, our website, and more information about the brands that we feature. Thank you again.